You and I back together again Thursday, September 16th, 2021, right here on Connecticut Today. How's the process going in redrawing lines and redistricting for all five of Connecticut's congressional districts and all 187 state Senate and state House districts? Shelton GOP State Rep Jason Perillo is on the nine-member committee trying to do just that, and we got a progress report on that from Jason. And I also had a few thoughts on the program regarding what we're hearing from local chiefs of police, that a lot of people are not locking their vehicles, and on top of that, some are leaving the keys in them. What's up with that? This is kind of a head-scratcher, and I need your help on this, and this plays into our WICC 600 Facebook question of the day. So if you go to facebook.com/WICC 600, you'll see the question there. And the question seems like, I mean, a lot of people are reading it going, Paul, what are you doing with this question? What are you drunk? What are you high? You know, here's why I'm asking it. And the question is, and I've already got a bunch of comments on this. The question is, it's pretty simple. Do you ever leave keys in your vehicle and or leave the vehicle's doors unlocked? And now you're probably going, what, Paul, in the year 2021? You know, we don't live in Mayberry. This isn't, you know, Sheriff Andy and Opie coming down the trail with their fishing rods. Get in the truck, Ope, I left the keys in, you started right up. No, this is 2021. In the People's Republic of Connecticut. Why would I ask that? Do you ever leave keys in your vehicle and or leave the vehicle's doors unlocked? Well, interesting story here. Liz Hardaway's story from early last evening. Police form a task force to combat car thefts in Fairfield County. Police departments are joining a regional task force to combat the growing trend of auto thefts in the area. Westport Police announcing yesterday, Wednesday, that the department there is joining the task force, which includes departments in Bridgeport, Fairfield, Stratford, Monroe, and Newtown. Now, you know, they're going to share resources and track some of the possible perps here, which is good. Now, you scroll down in this story, once again, Liz Hardaway's story in Hearst, Connecticut media here. It says these crimes are usually committed by juveniles or young adults. The police department's at it. Okay, and I know there are a lot of, you know, a lot of the left side of politics in the state saying, well, you're just trying to make a racial situation out of this, which is complete and utter garbage. Again, when you can't talk creatively or intelligently about a subject, hey, play the race card. But here's something that I read, and I don't mean to victim blame. And if you don't know what the phrase victim blaming means, it simply means this. You are ascribing the reason that a crime occurred primarily by what the victim of the crime does or does not do. You know, the old argument, well, guys wouldn't hit on that girl if she didn't wear spike heels and a short skirt. Well, no, she should be able to wear anything she wants within reason and not have guys leer and or physically touch her. Well, in this case, I'm not victim blaming here, but read this. Police say the crimes usually committed, and once again, by juveniles or young adults, and there was a gentleman they interviewed here for this story, and the Westport Police Chief Fody Kaskinas, he said, quote, the stolen vehicles are often used in the commission of very serious crimes, such as robberies or shootings, and in almost every case, department said, stolen cars were left unlocked with the keys or key fob inside. What? Now, in an ideal world, okay, in an ideal world, you should be able to keep your car unlocked, or your truck, or your SUV, or your RV, or your, I don't know, three-wheel motorcycles. Three-wheelers are getting fairly popular right now. Whatever you like. In an ideal world, if it's parked on your property, you should. There's no rule that says you have to lock your doors. There's no rule that says you can't, for convenience sake, leave the keys in the car or in the truck or in the RV. Well, I get that. But it's 2021. Who does that? Who does that? Well, Paul, you're being paranoid by locking your car where you live. No! No! I don't get it. Police say in almost every case, quote-unquote, that those are their words, in almost every case, quote-unquote, stolen cars were left unlocked with the keys or key fob inside. What? Huh? Do you still do that? Do you know anybody that does that? And again, I'm not climbing up anybody's backside because, you know, I'm doing it for effect here, but I'm just wondering. Well, I live in a very safe neighborhood, Paul. Okay, you live in a very safe neighborhood, all right? What's your car worth? 10 grand, 15 grand, 20, 30, Fairfield County, maybe 40? I don't know. I saw a figure the other day, the average new car now being sold in the U.S. because of the microchip shortage for the car's onboard computers is coming in at $42,000 a year. So if you have a brand new car, let's say you went out and spent 35, 38, 40 grand, 42 grand, okay? And you're going to leave that car out in front of your property, whatever, because you think you live in a safe neighborhood in Fairfield County. I don't care where, but let's use that for argument's sake. Okay, you do that, right? Fine, good, dandy, whatever. And it's stolen, and oh my God! Well, you left it unlocked. You left the key fob in there. Well, I should be able to do that. Well, would you pay for that car? $34,000. Okay, would you take piles of $100 bills? All right, would you take? Would you, let me see, 34 grand divided by 100 is 340. So would you leave 340 $100 bills neatly wrapped on a table outside your front, outside the front of your house and just kind of walk around, not even thinking that something might happen? I don't get it. What is going on here? People still leave their cars unlocked outside their home? I don't care whether the car's 3 feet from your side door. That's nuts. Am I missing something here, or am I just being too paranoid? You tell me. An issue of redistricting and what that means for folks in many cities or towns, whether or not their boundaries or borders as to who represents them in Hartford could change, maybe a lot, maybe a little. Maybe not at all. We welcome back a friend of the show, Shelton GOP State Rep Jason Perillo, who was one of the nine people tasked with coming up with a plan here that will be presented to the entire General Assembly. Hey, Jason, Paul here, my friend. How are you? How you been?
I'm great, Paul. How you doing?
I'm good. Thanks for joining us. Appreciate it. So how's it going? How is the process going? How have the public hearings been? Are people invested in this? Are they interested in it? Give us an update.
Well, you know, we've had some interest in the public hearings. In a lot of cases, we're hearing sort of the same message. Folks are very focused on equity, and rightly so. So we take that very, very seriously. And more than anything else, you know, that the one person, one vote concept is more than just a concept. It's really real to us. We're a little bit behind the eight ball. We had to wait for census data far longer than usual. In fact, we're really just getting into that data now. And that really becomes the core of what we do because it's going to drive where these lines sit. You know, these districts have to be pretty much the same size in terms of population. So you know, where we typically would have had this months ago, we're just getting it now and really trying to sift through it and figure out how we make sure these districts are appropriately drawn.
And the way, Jason, you do this, I guess, is theoretically and physically, you've got to actually, what, change boundaries here. Okay, if we move this over, this neighborhood, if we put this neighborhood in this district, then this adds X amount, 100 people. So it's really like a chess game here, isn't it?
It is literally as specific as we know where this house is, we know how many people live there, and we draw the lines based upon that house and the other 10,000 houses in that particular town. So we really drill down to that very specific level, just trying to keep things fair, trying to keep things balanced, making sure that, no groups are marginalized, and, just really trying to do the right thing. And in Connecticut, it's very different than a lot of states. In a lot of states, it's a partisan process. Here in Connecticut, we do it a little bit differently. We have what starts as a committee and then becomes a commission. That's just semantics. But it's bipartisan, Republicans and Democrats in equal numbers. So, we just really have to sit down and do what's right for the state and negotiate our way through it and come up with a map that works.
Jason, I did see in a couple of newspaper stories that were very interesting, a couple of interesting issues. One being, should you folks doing this and the eventual approval or disapproval and reworking by the General Assembly as a whole, should entire neighborhoods of an ethnic origin or ethnic groups be concentrated in single areas and not be broken up because it would be better for them to be represented that way? What are your thoughts on that?
Well, that swings both ways. And we'll sort of talk about a town. So we've heard folks in public hearings say, hey, in my town, I like the fact that my town's divided into three legislative districts and I have three representatives serving me. Like a town like Derby is like that. But then I've heard other towns like Wilton that say, we have multiple districts within our town and no legislator that serves us lives in Wilton. So, and I can say as a legislator, it's nice to have a delegation of legislators fighting for one town. I just served the city of Shelton. But if you don't have a legislator who lives in your town, it can be, or it lives within your group or within your neighborhood, it can be a little bit difficult for a legislator to really understand the needs of that town. And you really have to understand your constituents if you're going to serve them properly.
Jason, is there a fear that at all by any members of this 9-member committee that you're a part of, is there a fear that you guys and gals will do your damnedest, you'll do the best you can, you'll say, man, this is good, let's do this, and then when it gets to a group approval by the General Assembly, you're going to hit those roadblocks or speed bumps as has happened in the past here?
No, I mean, actually not. We're a bipartisan group of, I like to think, level-headed, reasonable legislators. And, if you come together with a fair product, the legislature is supportive of that. Where we could risk running astray is if we as a group said, hey, this is what we want, and it's really not the right thing for the state, but heck with it, we don't care. And then, you get your feet held to the fire.
Yeah.
But that's not going to happen in this particular case. I'm not concerned about that.
Okay, finally, time frame here. I know you say you got the numbers a little late. I've been talking about that here in the show. Of course, next year, an even-numbered year. So you guys and gals in the General Assembly are up. The congressional districts are up. So when do you finally think, roughly, Jason, you and the 8 other folks on this committee will be putting a plan forward?
Well, you'd love to have it sooner rather than later. I think there's a very real likelihood, and I hate to say it, and people aren't going to want to hear it, especially those on the commission, but, we could be sitting here, the day before Thanksgiving, the Friday after Thanksgiving. I know of years where, there's been an exchange of maps on Thanksgiving Day because that really sort of butts up against the end of our timeline.
Mm-hmm.
So you hate to be doing things at the last minute. Last minute stuff is bound to have mistakes. So my goal is to make sure that we're not in that situation and that we're in advance of the deadline. But, these projects, as they can be, we could be at the 11th hour.
Hey,
and
you never know. You could be moving those borders around at the same time. Jason's saying, hey, pass the stuffing, you know, pass the pecan pie on Thanksgiving. It may have
and
to
let
get...
Let me see that map while you're at it.
Yeah, right. Hey, any more mashed potatoes down there? Jason Perillo, Republican State Rep. Shelton, one of nine people in the General Assembly tasked with coming up with new boundaries for the House and Senate districts, corrected boundaries, not all will be new, and for the five congressional districts. Jason, good to talk to you. Thank you, my friend, for the time. We'll hook up down the road. Thanks.
Paul, thanks.
Appreciate it. Jason Perillo. There you go. State Rep. Shelton, he and eight others. It's a committee of nine. They are tasked, folks, with writing and adjusting the new boundaries for the state's 36 state Senate districts, the state's 151 state House districts, and the state's five congressional districts. Why? Well, because every 10 years we take a census, and you have to adjust roughly to equalize the population in all of those. Got it? All right. That's part of your civics quiz. There'll be a civics lesson. There'll be a quiz on this tomorrow.